Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Gypsy Poet Radio. I'm the Gypsy Poet, and this evening we are featuring a director, producer, and actor who has blown away audiences and Hollywood itself with his stature as well as his cult status, and he is awesome. Please welcome the one, the only, and the fabulous Craig DeMuck.
Well, hi, everybody. That was a great introduction, I got to tell you. Thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. Well, you are, to me, you are legendary status, and you deserve it, and I wanted to give you an intro that matches it. So that is my gift to you.
I appreciate that. You know, and it took a few years in the running to get this status. You know, didn't come easy, but
of course,
here we are.
You know, as our friend Maximilian once said, he said everybody wants to be famous, but nobody wants to work for it. And I absolutely love that statement because he's right. He totally is. And
he is absolutely right.
Yes. Yeah, and I've been working on this show.
I was saying, my whole goal ever since I was a kid, seven, six, eight years old, with a bad stutter, I never thought about being famous. I just thought, get away from bullies that bullied me because I stuttered. But it was the passion for being an actor, movies, that drove me. Not to be famous, why, but to go on the big screen where I would not stutter. So I had something to prove to myself about that, and it drove me. Not to be famous, but to self-confidence and to show to the world a stutter, a handicap, would not hold me down. That was it, not being famous.
Mm-hmm. Amen, you know? To that. And you've accomplished a lot. In the last four decades, you've accomplished a heck of a lot, man. So kudos to you for everything that you've been doing.
Thank you.
Yes. Or what introduced you to directing films?
Directing, producing, right here. I got to tell you. Who it was. Yeah, I tell you. I told you as a kid, Northern Minnesota, I had a bad stutter. I was even held back twice in school because they thought I was slow. I just thought different. And as little kids, I lived on a beautiful lake called Lake Vermilion in northern Minnesota, in one of the most beautiful lakes in the world. And it was so nice. My parents and my grandparents had a cabin on Lake Vermilion, northern Minnesota. And this couple from Newport Beach, California, to get a getaway from Newport Beach was Mr. Busby, one of the heads of one of the major magazines like Life magazine. And he and his wife, Busby, they'd come up every summer for at least a month or more. And they would bring their next-door neighbor up with them because she loved northern Minnesota, a fisherwoman, this and that. And it happened to be Kay Olsen, Rock Hudson's mother, in the 50s, the number one biggest star in the world for decades. And as luck would have it, they sold their cabin, and Kay Olsen would stay with us every summer. And that was like five, 6 years old, all the way up through high school. And she, I was like the grandmother, surrogate grandmother, that she, I was like the grandson she would never have for obvious reasons. She became like family to me, and through the years, Rock Hudson himself, Rock Hudson, he's the one that really drove me. As a kid growing up, I started watching movies because I would go watch all his movies, and I pretend in the playing as a kid, 8, 9 years old, that I'm going to make my own movies and my own presentations, and I'm going to be a star in movies because I won't stutter. And at age 13, since Halls for Christmas time, and there's Rock Hudson. And I said, Rock, like family, he says, someday I'm going to be in movies just like you. I said, well, why do you want to be in movies? You will, Craig. He says, because I will not stutter and will not be bullied. And he said, you will. Through the years, I end up taking, held back twice, mind you, bullied this and that or not, became a musician in a rock band. I took all the acting classes I can. And I ended up graduating, and this is with the influence of certain teachers, my family, Kay Olson, Rock Hudson, and Rock Hudson himself influenced me. And I ended up graduating at the University of Minnesota with a double degree in theater arts and journalism and film, and moved to L.A. Moved to L.A. with no one gave me a chance. I even stuttered when I moved there, and within the first 8 years there, I had the number one talk show, and I stuttered on it, on Group WTV Public Access in L.A. And I would go on to produce two of the top cult films now in the world. And that, and what drove me, what really got me into films, to directing, producing, well, it was my passion to get over my stutter. And through the years, I realized that I can help other people with some handicaps. I became like a, people looked up for me for what I did for them. To, you can do anything you want. And it was Rock Hudson of all people, biggest star in the world, told me I would. So that's kind of what happened.
I like that. You know? And of course, Rock Hudson is a legend in the film history books. And to have a mentor like that is quite an amazing feat of excellence.
Yes.
Yes. So you already answered my second question, so we can skip that one. We were going to go straight to the third one, which is, what's the best part about directing a story?
The best part of directing a story is, I told as a kid, I wrote my little stories in the woods with my play friends, and I like a story then. I said, you know what, and boom. I had stories. I said, well, you know what, someday I'm going to make my own movies, and boom. So I got to tell you, not all my stories are, I mean, they're out there. They're horror films, they're wild films, but they use my imagination. And one of my first films I ever saw as a kid, I was age seven, my mom loved horror films. I would watch Shock Theater with my mom. And there was The Wolfman. The first one was The Wolfman. And I said, geez, I'm going to start doing this. So when I moved to L.A., I did the movie Malibu High with the three friends, but I also wrote a story, a Microwave Massacre. I wrote it and for class. And then 2 years later, the people that worked Malibu High says, God, that's a great story, Craig. How'd you come up with this one? Just totally different. I want something different. I always wanted something unusual no one else write. And I said, you know what? My instructor in UCLA, give me an idea, because it was totally different. I said, well, yeah, if I want to make a movie, produce a movie, direct a movie, it has to be something out of my imagination that I love. And if I love it, I really want to project to the audience by directing and producing it, my feeling about it, and they like it, I've really succeeded. I mean, taking someone else, I mean, there's all been filmed in the past, other people directed them, and they maybe gone nowhere or whatever. But they might have taken someone else's story, directed it, without the passion behind it. Granted, Microwave Massacre, but comedy about cannibalism. But what made it great, and why it's the dark humor about it, is I took this real person, Jackie Vernon, Turns into a cannibal because he couldn't stand his wife's cooking. But he was a meat and potatoes guy, and his life was terrible life, and how carelessly he became a cannibal. But he became like a hero to all his people at the construction site, of all things. So it was this character, a real person that people could relate to, even to this day. Said, God, you directed, you produced this story about this Donald. That's an everyday character. Obviously, everyday characters like him would not think about beating their wife up with a salt shaker and then cooking them in the microwave. But it's just that this guy, all the people vicariously watching the movie lives through him. So, jeez, I won't do that, but jeez, that's the way I feel about my life. And it says, Craig, what your film is not one of the top cult films in the world. It's because you captured that. And that's the way I felt in making Microwave Massacre. It was a real story in a way, cannibal or not. I had to use real characters when I write it. Like my last film, A Taboo Identity. It's a documentary, but it's about real people, Kate Parker, you know. That's what makes me want to produce, direct, whether it's horror film or whatever. It has to be about the humanity of the person. And that's why I like to direct the film and produce.
Awesome. You've done various shows in your time. Tell me about this one called Hollywood Showcase.
Yeah. The Hollywood Showcase came up. I moved to L.A. late 70s, right after college, and moved there. I left out. I told you about Malibu High, a major cult film that the three of us put together. Not knowing anything, we got in and Microwave Master. Well, what happened was, I have a background in acting. I stuttered or not, and it was the acting, the improv that helped me get over my stuttering, or at least not worry about it, cares, you know. I'm doing it. I'm on the stage. They aren't, and stuttered or not. So early 80s, this guy approached me. His name was Michael Morrison, like 1982. He comes up, says, crazy. I do some improv stuff. He says, God, you joke about stuttering. He says, now you have celebrity stuff. You made a movie, but God, you're a funny guy. How would you like to do a TV show? So I'm producing this show at Group W. I'd love to produce your show and be behind it. So early in 1982, I go down Group W and we start producing this show called Craig Muckler's Hollywood Showcase. And I made no bones about that I stuttered, but I had this personality. And I said, yeah, this is going to be the Hollywood Showcase. It's going to be fun, different. My version of Johnny Carson, but it's going to be Johnny Carson meets Saturday Night Live, meets Ed Sullivan with improv. My very first show, boom, I had Alan Holzman on. Alan Holzman was stuttered. Stuttered, 1982. He did a film called Forbidden World, and he directed his first film for Roger Corman. The guy stuttered and 5 years prior, he was his top editor. Of all shows, I have a stutterer on. Like, how is this going to work out? Are we going to get through the whole show without saying one word? without stuttering? But wow, what a way to start my show. Alan Holzman and stutter. And Roger Corman himself, icon, sent a trailer with Alan to personally show on my TV show, a trailer from Forbidden World. So who viewed this, my first show? My hero also, Roger Corman, made all these horror films. Watch my very first show. And there's Alan Holzman stuttering on the show. It was phenomenal. The rating, right off the bat. So, wow, what a different show. And then I started doing these other shows, and my stutter actually started losing it. Because why? I lost the fear of stuttering. That's who cares? I have all these people watching my show. Why do I care if they stutter or not? They like me for what I do, yeah. what I do. And didn't stutter. So what an impact that had in the long run. That I became influenced with people with handicaps. I could care less if I stuttered or not. And my show became the number one radio show on Public Access Group W for years, you know?
Like I said, you've overcome a lot in a short amount of time, and you have accomplished feats of excellence. And,
well, thank you. I mean, it's up and down. Not everything turned out like you want, but that's the name of the show business, you know? It is.
Yep.
And
I'm
still strive.
Happy.
I mean, yeah, thank you. I mean, then a microwave massacre comes along. It took 3 years to get it released because no one understood it. And then when it was finally released, in 1983, took 3 years because no one understood. Paramount Pictures were going to pick the thing up, but they couldn't because we don't know how to release it. There's nothing like it. But when it did release in 1983, it erupted as the number one cult film and was one of the top three money-making VHSs in the country and number one in England. I was crazy. And, I mean, I thought, gee, we have this bomb, and look what happens. I should have known something, though. We had a screening for it a couple years before. And this is true. I said, geez, Wayne, this is going to be tough. And we made this film. I had investors, and we had no place. It's no one picking it up. And I had a screening at the Beverly Hills screening room. And there was screen number one was Big 20th Century Fox, and screen two was my little movie for distributors. And the door opens, and 5 minutes into the film, this guy sits behind me, and Wayne, my director. And these people come from the other Big 20, says, Tim, you're in the wrong screening room. I says, and Tim O'Leary, the guru of LSD, one of the most famous people in the freaking world, you know, I mean, in the world, they listen to everything he says, but, you know, at the end, he said, I'm watching this. This is one of the coolest films I've ever seen. And at the end of the screening, he comes to my, this is Tim O'Leary, on the front of Life magazine. He comes up, Craig, he says, I mean, you haven't released this film? I said, no, no one understands it. Or he says, well, they will. This is Tim O'Leary. He says, you know, Craig, this film is one of the coolest films I've ever seen since Sarakon, Fellini, Sarakon, you're right there with it. He told me that. I mean, this is one of the, I mean, in the world. And everyone, you know, I mean, Life magazine, all the stuff that they'd listen to everything he said, and for him to say that, I said, well, I hope it happens. But you know what? Took years. And now, in the last 4 years, re-released through Arrow Films, it just named one of the top five cult films in the world of all time, right there with Harold and Maude, Rocky Horror Picture Show, and Night of the Living Dead. And my God, the guru of LSD all those years late before was dead right on.
Very, very cool. Well, what
you know
milestones
what I mean?
I'm seeing here. Yeah, milestones. I'm seeing this. I'm thinking, wow. I mean, you are enlightening just as much as Mr. Novak was last week. Oh, wow, just listening to this is like, I just feel like I'm in the wonderful land of Oz, in all honesty.
Yeah. You know?
I know that you're originally from Minnesota, but what city are you from? And here's a really important question. What is the difference between your hometown and Hollywood?
Well, the scoop is, you know, as I told you, I was born and raised in northern Minnesota. And Virginia, Minnesota was only like 15,000 people, northern Minnesota, not even near the Twin Cities where, you know, the hub of a lot of stuff is. So, I mean, from my hometown, 1,000 degrees difference, obviously. Yeah. It's a mining camp. U.S. Steel, all this stuff. But that being said, it was still Virginia, Minnesota, So they had great schools, this and that, and they even had a junior college, so it was good. So they had sort of a mining camp. They had a lot of culture out there. So when I got, I mean, when I graduated, when I, after high school, 2 years at Wasabi State, and it was in all the college plays, I became an editor for the Norseman News in theaters. They had theater up there. So you would think for a little town in northern Minnesota, the similarity is that they had plays up there. I was in Northern Lights Players with adults, in high school, I'd be in plays with them. I mean, and they always had, you know, guys and dolls, these top plays. So it was remarkable for a mining company that it was actually damn well cultured. And that gave me my, I had one of my top acting instructors at Wasabi State. So he says, and it's true. He says, Craig, you have what it takes. What happened was they were going to put a big play on called Long Day's Journey Tonight. Virginia, Minnesota. Eugene O'Neill, this classic play that would turn into a movie with famous actors. And I went to audition for it, and the student director said, well, you know, he might not work out because he might stutter. There's no lie. So a week before, they're going to put the play on. Chuck Rowland, who had faith in me, says, Craig, I want you. You have what it takes to take over this part of Edwin Perron. This other guy just can't handle it. Stutter or not, you're an actor. So I did this. I said, geez, Eugene O'Neill, I'm going to stutter. It was the back of my mind. So what happens is opening night, packed. And I said, God, am I going to stutter? And here it is. This Chuck Rowland instructor did major stuff, like in Minneapolis. But he came up there and had faith in me in little town. And opening night, 3 hours, my parents were there, worried if I was going to stutter. And I went through it. At the end of the play, I had a standing ovation. Fourth night, it was unbelievable. All these people, my God, this is Craig Muckler who stuttered? And I ended up winning the award as best actor of the year in that college play. And the funny thing is, at the end, I had a reporter from a local paper come up to me. God, you were more remarkable. And, you know, interviewed me, and I stuttered the heck to the reporter. you know what I mean? But that play in Virginia, Minnesota, led me to the University of Minnesota, where I had faith and experience that I needed to go to one of the top 10 universities in the world, University of Minnesota. I ended up graduating at the University of Minnesota Theater Art Journalism Film, and then moved to 2 years later, within a year, to L.A. So, yes, in a way, that little town of Virginia, Minnesota was like a Hollywood to me. They had everything I needed to train me for Hollywood in a town of 15,000 people.
Wow. That is an amazing story. Great stuff.
Pretty crazy stuff. You know?
Yeah. Oh, fabulous. Yeah. So what do you want people to take away from your films?
Don't eat people if you're a cannibal. I mean, they're different. I mean, they are. I mean, not that I've done that many films. I mean, but my first two films, Malibu High, three of us did it, Larry Folds, Tom Singer, and myself. I mean, I just moved from Minnesota to L.A. I went to a place called Tarzana, California. And within 6 months, I'm managing a movie theater. And I'm taking classes at UCLA. And next thing I know, I'm taking this class with Burke. And next thing I know, three of us, punks, kids, decide let's form a company. We raise money, and we did a movie called Malibu High through Brooks Institute. And I got to tell you, we did what no one's ever done. Brooks Institute this Larry Follis, young kid, was going to school there, and we approached the heads of Brooks Institute on films, everything, to use their students. We'd have a skeleton crew of only three professionals, Herb Berwick, our professional guy, and we'd use the crew, I mean the top students from Brooks Institute, to do all the crew. And we used their little studio there. We made the movie Malibu High. No one's ever done that. And we did it. We used it, and those students, one for one, they got credit in class. And I got to tell you, when we did Malibu High, we made a deal, and Crown International picked it up, cost $80,000. They gave us a check that equaled the budget. That hasn't been done. And within 3 years, we have a film that I used students in, but the top students. And it went on its first year. Box Office International put it on the front of their magazine. This $80,000 film, first 60 days of release, $2.5 million. And all those students that work with us got students. So anyway, yeah. After that, I always want to use my people. Oh my God, we had all these students. And I got to tell you, 80% of them would come along and work with me on Microwave Massacre. And all of them, because of us, they had no idea. They would all work in the industry within a year because of what we did. No one else had done that at that time, but us three did it. And to this day, I'm still in touch with some of those people that we gave the chance back in 1978. No one else gave the chance. I mean, geez. And we went on, God, that has never been done. They got students, they graduated because working on our film, and they got credit on a feature film, right? When they hadn't even graduated with. You know what I mean? That's, wow, pretty crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And I was only in 20s, with this idea, you know what I mean?
Yeah. With just a little bit of time left on the show, I just wanted to say a quick shout out to the Williamson PR firm. Thank you so much, Joe Williamson, for bringing me Craig Meckler. And of course,
God,
to yes, absolutely. So
I love.
Yeah.
Joseph Willen, I mean, brought me in. I'm in the agency, and through him, I'm working. And you know, I am executive producer working on Dustin Ferguson's film, Angry Asian Murder Hornets. This was developed just months ago, and we did what no one else had done. We did. I mean, he's
right.
A genius director, but we did. I mean, pretty much secretly, and did. My God, this. I mean, the movie was finished, all of a sudden erupt in May about these hornets invading the country. I mean, we were on the cutting edge. That was the news. And now this month, the film's released, and now we are the news. How about that?
Yeah.
And, I just had to shout out Dustin Ferguson, myself, this little, and it's out in DVD now. And that's all because of Joseph Williamson put us together.
Yes.
How about
I got to show some love. Yes, I got to show some love to some people like Alan Johnson. Thank you so much for sharing the link and sharing the promos on Facebook, and as well as to Laura Gonzalez in Houston, Texas. Thank you, my girl, for spreading the love of GPR. I want to thank Joe Williamson. And if you are listening to GPR on this direct link, you can also find it on Pandora. You can find it on Spotify as well as Apple Music and or iTunes. And you can find it on iHeartRadio.com under the podcast. Thank you so much for calling in and joining us on GPR, Mr. Craig DeMuckler. You are an amazing individual with a wonderful story. And like I said before, I could just give you one big hug and just give you a kiss on the cheek.
It'd be great.
You are you're the most wonderful individual I've ever met so far. And of course, I got to send a shout out to Miss Catherine Coven Pacino. Thank you so much for sharing my link on GPR.
I love her too. She's going to be working with us.
Yes. Yes, and of course.
And just quick, my director's cut of A Taboo Identity. I'm doing it. Kate Parker's story is going to be back in theaters next year, and it all and that's a remarkable people, including David Wall and Joe Scholin, the most remarkable interviewer in the world, coming out again next year with a new director's cut.
Yes, absolutely. All righty, Craig. It was a wonderful opportunity to get a chance to talk to you on GPR, and I want to feature you again, so we will be talking about that in the future. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and this is the Gypsy Poet signing off, saying adio for now.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.